Hello and welcome to the Southbound Sports Show. I'm your host, Richie Leahy, here with my co-host, Maddie B. Having a little bit of technical difficulties, and I'm trying to do an actual video type thing. So if you go to YouTube, look up Southbound Sports, subscribe to us, and get updates. We go live around 9 every Tuesday. And this week we're going to be talking about Big Ten expansion. And it seemed to heat up last week. Down here in North Carolina, the board made a change to where the approval process for leaving a conference comes down to like the chancellor doing a pitch. And so they made it so that it's easier for a school inside the UNC system to leave their conference. Now, for those that are keeping track at home, it's similar to how UCLA ran into issues because them and Cal and a bunch of other schools in California shared the same board. So UCLA as a school were like, hey, we're going to the Big Ten. And Cal was like, no, you're not. We're not approving this. Like, we're getting our guys to vote against it. And so they were trying to rally all the other Cal schools. And eventually the board decided that it was best for the university system. Like, if UCLA went, they'd be making more money. And I think, I could be wrong, but I know the initial agreement was that, like, UCLA has to pay Cal a certain amount of money every year. And so I'm pretty sure that's still in the agreement. So people at Rutgers that are complaining about not getting their full payout from the Big Ten yet, and like Oregon's going to be doing the same thing. Imagine if you do get the full payout, but you're still paying like your little brother school, like money just to be quiet. And so it looks like that's what UNC was trying to avoid. And so now they're making it so that a school can do what's in its best interest in terms of like athletics and that type of conference alignment, which to me struck as kind of odd. So I've been talking to a couple of buddies of mine and some people that I know have inside tracks. And I've heard a couple of things that to me, I don't really believe. And I've seen it posted on a couple of message boards too. And the first one is that there's going to be this mass breakaway where all the schools kind of go into their own league. And just real quick, the reason I don't think that's going to happen is you can't form a mini NFL with a bunch of schools that are tied to like state governments, try to become a monopoly. And then the key that always makes my ears perk up is someone told me that there's talks about trying to do a salary cap, which to my knowledge is illegal. You can't restrict someone's income, especially at like a state level or private school, like just because you're in a group, right? That's like tampering. And the other thing that stood out is you also can't leave the NCAA, which is a national organization, and then not include every state. That's the one aspect that people kind of overlook. But you're not going to break the national board and then say, hey, you guys have no access to XYZ or whatever. We're doing this. I would be very shocked. Like, people keep telling me, oh, XYZ school, they're getting in. And they're like the third or fourth school from their state. And I'm thinking, nah, you have a better chance of seeing like Wyoming or West Virginia pop up in there just because from a politics side, their politicians are going to want access, right? Because if West Virginia is left out, their politicians can come on and try to do a national thing to like the Supreme Court, and they're not going to rule in the favor of like the big schools, right? Because they're still getting tax dollars. They're still getting funding from outside. The other thing that I've heard a couple people have, someone tied to Ohio State told me that Ohio State's been looking into possibly privatizing like their athletics. And I believe it, right? To where they might just become the Ohio State athletics thing and not really be tied to the university. And I wonder if they were almost using that as a threat. Because if they did do that, and then they formed like a mini NFL, then it would work. But that goes back to my original argument from weeks ago, where if you remove the school aspect and just make a semi-pro team, what's the connection? Like, if you went to Ohio and you were a Bobcat, and now Ohio State was so greedy that they ruined college athletics, you're not going to just start cheering for the Buckeyes. You might just cheer for the Bobcats and whatever's left behind. Because I guarantee the schools that are abandoned, they're not going to let Ohio State's private semi-pro team play in the NCAA tournament anymore. Because that would be insane. Right?
You know, I almost... we've kicked this model around before. And I almost feel like if you go with the two super conference model, and you do this like essentially AFC NFC style thing, the question that's always sat in the back of my mind is, what do you do with the teams that don't necessarily qualify in that? Because I always have the mindset now, and maybe it's just out of paranoia or ongoing negative feelings from the playoff snub, but I'm like, as much as I think Florida State would deserve a spot in either the Big Ten or the SEC, it's not a guarantee that they go that route. And especially when you look at like the SEC having Florida in-house, and they already have that print in Florida and in the South, that there wouldn't be that motivation to add Florida State. And, you know, crazier winds could pull a different. I'm hoping that Florida State doesn't get left out in it, but I also am not going to put up my blind faith in the Big Ten's going to come knocking either. But I think when you look at that, like, so you expand to however many teams, well, what do you do with, you know, like using your North Carolina model, if UNC makes the jump? But then what happens to NC State and Duke and East Carolina and App State? Like, you know, I feel like at that point, maybe you have some regional conferences where it's almost like how they have the relegated leagues or relegated conferences, that you have a chance to win out and play yourself into the power conference. And on the flip side, I'm sorry, Nebraska. I'm sorry, Rutgers. Just because you were in there and you've done absolutely nothing doesn't mean that you deserve to keep your place at the table either. If we're gonna base this purely off of we want the best teams, well, then you got to earn your weight. And if you're not winning, then play down.
Well, see, that's the one thing that they could do to kind of get around it, is do the relegation. And I think a lot of fans need to be careful with that. Because, like, using my West Virginia example, West Virginia in the Big East was always on top. They jumped to the Big 12. They've been having issues. What if they go down and school support, because they're a smaller school, just drops? They're not getting money. They're not getting recruits. And they never, ever come back. And you're the flagship. And a school like SMU comes in and they're just throwing money around. They're like, we don't need TV money. We got oil money. I'm going to do whatever I need to do to compete. And that's where I think the schools really need to be careful, because you see with basketball and like Duke, doesn't matter what the head coach position does. They have money to throw around. They want to invest it in basketball. And that's where you're kind of like, how do you decide what schools get access and what don't? Because I see a lot of people drawing a clear line like, oh, 32-team super conference or 48. We can do two leagues of 24. It's awesome. But that's cutting out what the old Power Four was like, 68 teams or something like that. So no matter what, you're going to be cutting schools out. And that's why I said last week I was going to bring in, I think we're going to see a small change. And this kind of goes through, I'm going to look at the Big Ten first, because I think the Big Ten and the SEC need to be careful with how they approach it. Before I get into this real quick, The latest proposal is that there's going to be a change in 2026. The Big Ten and the SEC, there are rumors that they're going to announce an expansion relatively soon that's going to happen that year. That lines up with Florida State's potential lawsuit date, where one of the lawsuits said that they could get out theoretically in 2026. I have a feeling that UNC, all the ACC stuff has been done in North Carolina. They kind of know that, and that's why they did the Board of Governors vote last week. Because why else would they randomly do that, right? And ESPN didn't promote it because they don't want to lose UNC. but I didn't put any stock into that when I made this chart. But so what happened last week was the Big Ten and the SEC, they said, hey, we want to go to a 14-team playoff in 2026 because we're going to be expanding again. And we want to have our two teams get the bye. So like last year, Michigan and Alabama both would have got the bye. And then everyone else kind of just there. But we want three or four auto bids and everybody else gets one. Well, then the ACC and Big 12 were like, whoa, wait a second. We need two auto bids then. And that's where I think things start to get crazy, because if you're locking in auto bids, how do you know that a conference is going to be worth the auto bid? And you're opening yourself up to political scrutiny, which is kind of like what they don't want. And so to me, I'll put together a simple model. It might have been a little bit changed from last week, but the main thing is that I focused on the Big Ten, not so much the SEC. I'm assuming they're going to do something similar. So right now the Big Ten has 18 teams. That doesn't make sense from scheduling, and it really doesn't give them a good chance at like keeping things traditional. So what I did was I added two teams. I added Florida State and I added Georgia Tech. Now, before I get started, let me just give you my thought process. If I'm the Big Ten, the first team that I call is Florida. No offense to Florida State, but the Big Ten has like the academic thing. They check Florida out and make them say no. Then they call Notre Dame and they see what they're up to. If Florida says yeah, why not call? I would also call Texas and Texas A&M, which I'm on record saying multiple times, because the Big Ten needs more recruiting grounds. They're already in California now. That's good. But they 100% need to get in Florida, in the state of Florida. And they should probably get in Texas. But for right now, I took the next best two, because I'm thinking that Florida and them say no for right now, just because ESPN's going to kind of put the pressure on them. I think Notre Dame, because of the playoff expansion, they're going to also say no. So if I'm the Big Ten, I'm grabbing Florida State and Georgia Tech purely for recruiting grounds. I wouldn't be surprised if you ended up seeing UNC instead of Georgia Tech and Florida State. Do they seem like they're best buddies? No. But it's more of like the UNC is talking about adding a D1 hockey team. They just fit better with the Big Ten. Everyone down here seems that they want to go to the SEC, but I really don't think they're looking at the big picture. And they're more hoping that SEC football kind of raises the profile of UNC. Michigan winning the national championship last year changes a lot of that. Because Ohio State's reloading. If Ohio State wins the national championship this year, the Big Ten has won back-to-back, and they also have Washington or Oregon. Heck, if Oregon wins it, it doesn't matter. Or USC, like there's a lot of extra teams now where before the Big Ten, they really only had one or two teams competing for a national championship, where the SEC usually had four or five. That's why they were able to win so many more. Same with the ACC, they were in the Big Ten's boat where they only had two teams competing every year. Now, with the Big Ten being so big, they can kind of go above it. The problem is they have a scheduling issue. By going to 20 teams, they can do regional groups. I did keep one thing where I have Rutgers and Maryland here in the East group, but I purposely put Indiana and Purdue in group B, because if Notre Dame came with Florida State, I could easily see not really a geographic group, but I would probably put Florida State, Penn State, Notre Dame, Indiana and Purdue in a pod, and then just kind of shift the Rutgers and Maryland like to the Michigan, Ohio State one. Because I really want to have two power teams, and I don't think Notre Dame's going to want to be in the Group C here with the other Big Ten teams. I think they're going to be one. They're going to want to be shoehorned in the East, and if that's what it takes to get them in, and you're giving them their rivals in Purdue and Indiana, do it. Because right now, Group A works out. I have Florida State, Penn State, Georgia Tech, Rutgers, and Maryland. And then Group B, I have Michigan, Ohio State, Indiana, Purdue. And I put Northwestern because I feel like Michigan has a trophy game with them now. I didn't really want to put Minnesota in there because Group C doesn't really have a historical power. Because I have Michigan State, Wisconsin, Iowa, Minnesota, and Illinois. All of those teams have been competitive in the Big Ten West. Michigan State's made the playoffs. Wisconsin has a couple division titles and conference championships in recent times. Same with Iowa. I did that, and I kicked Nebraska. I knew they were the new guy, but you brought them up without me even hinting to you that they haven't pulled their weight. So they're the odd man out. They go west with Washington, Oregon, USC, and UCLA. And the way this works out perfect is you rotate. You have one group that you've scheduled. That's your schedule group for the year. And every time you play them, like you just do a zipper and you do home. And then the next time you play them, you do away. And they would kind of balance it out. But it's a lot easier to schedule this way because your rivals are traditionally in your group. I know like Florida State would be with like Maryland and the other ACC team that came in. And then they would have Penn State, I know, kind of like a new thing. But we're trying to get other rivalries up where Penn State really hasn't competed on the top level. That's why I would really put them with Notre Dame. Notre Dame's been underwhelming to where if I put them with Florida State, Florida State's pretty much the top dog. Notre Dame and Penn State might be able to jump. But I wanted to kind of balance it out to where you have at least one or two teams that can compete. So they would schedule, so like this year, Group A and Group B hypothetically would have played, and then Group C and Group D. The winner of those divisions then play for the Big Ten Championship. And so I also created something here where you have a showcase weekend. And I took some liberties with the scheduling. I said Michigan would have won out there undefeated. And since they played Florida State, I gave Florida State a hypothetical loss. But Michigan and Washington would have been undefeated playing in the Big Ten Championship the first week of December. The winner of that game would go to the one seed. In a 14-team playoff, they would get a bye. So Michigan would have got the bye. But I don't want a 14-team playoff. I'll get to that in a second. Then the other six teams. But my only rule is that one from each pod has to make the showcased weekend. So this time it would be Iowa. And they would have won their division anyway last year because they were in the Big Ten Championship game. So I have Penn State and Oregon playing. And the reason I have these matches set up is you're not doing a rematch, but you're kind of looking at the final records and you're doing a showcase weekend to hopefully give the Big Ten power teams one more data point to get into the playoffs. So Penn State plays Oregon. Ohio State plays Iowa. Northwestern plays Florida State. In my scenario, Oregon beats Penn State. Oregon's in the playoffs. Ohio State beats Iowa. Ohio State makes the playoffs. And Florida State beats Northwestern. Those three teams would get at-large bids. And I used the rankings from last year. Washington also would have got one. Washington, even though they lost to Michigan, they only would have had one loss. They would have been the three team. And so then you have the SEC probably doing the same. In my scenario, with no auto bids, based on last year's rankings, the Big Ten would have had five teams in the playoffs, in a 14-team playoff. Five teams. That's more than the three guaranteed auto bids. And that's where I think that they need to be careful. Because if they push, hey, we want three auto bids, and then the Big 12 and the ACC also get two auto bids, you're not going to have a lot of at-large teams. And I think with their larger conference, if they're able to nab Florida State to solidify like an Eastern type division or whatever you want to call it, that team or that conference is going to have more chance to get teams into the playoffs going forward. Real quick before I get your thoughts, my dream scenario would be an 18 team playoff where every conference gets one auto bid. The lowest four ranked teams do a play-in game. the next weekend after conference championship weekend. So I think I looked at the year last or the schedule this year. I think we'd have enough time where it would be the 16 teams or whatever would play, and then you'd have like the Elite Eight around Christmas weekend. And then New Year's would be the Final Four, and then the championship game would be kind of where it is, like a week after. Right. So I think it would still kind of work out. The play-in games is where it kind of gets messy. But if the other conferences start their schedule a week earlier and you have the Big Ten and the SEC stop and play theirs normally, I think that and the TV networks are probably going to be behind it because they want the Big Ten and the SEC showcase, that they would be fine with it. Last year, the ACC would have only had one team in. And keep in mind that I took Florida State out, so I made Louisville the champ. So they would have got one team in. The Big 12 would have got two, with Oklahoma State being the champ, and then they would have had Arizona at an at-large. I know, hypothetically, they probably would have played in a championship game and maybe had one of them eliminated and Notre Dame could have snuck in, but I didn't want Notre Dame to be in this scenario. So there you have it. Liberty would have been the highest. Whatever.
But you know darn well, expanding out that many, you're talking. You can't say you're worried about ratings and then not putting Notre Dame in this expanded format. They'll have to find a way to snake their way in.
I think they're pushing it to where they want them to join a conference. I think that's why the Big Ten and the SEC created that advisory group. I wouldn't even have been surprised if they were like, "What's on the docket? Well, we got to get rid of the independents," because that was our talking point last week. Notre Dame's the only one left. Because they're not going to really be able to do anything or force the auto bids. The reason I go to a one conference auto bid, and they could even do a max of like six conferences, because if you did that, I guarantee when the Big Ten expands and grabs Florida State, the ACC is already talking about down here what teams they want to backfill with. I think Conference USA has the least amount of teams. I could see Conference USA just disappearing. And then you have the MAC and the AAC and then the Sun Belt and the Mountain West or whatever one ends up going away. And you just tell them, "Hey, you guys are in the playoffs, but you four have to start your conference weekend earlier. And then you have to give us, you have to play each other in like a mini play-in tournament." And then that way everyone has access. You don't have to worry about it. Are they going to be the lowest ranked teams? Most likely. I mean, it's rare now. Since the call 14 playoff that there's like a Boise State even in the discussion. Like last time it would have been Cincinnati, but the teams that have been close have already been nabbed. Like I think all the teams that could be in the top 10 hypothetically most years would probably be scooped up by the ACC or the Big 12 once the SEC and the Big 10 expand again. So you realistically have those two and you're letting them know, "Hey, the ACC and the Big 12, we're only going to at least get one auto bid there." That way, from their perspective, and I'm surprised like the ACC isn't pushing for this, if they go on a run like Clemson's winning championships and they're able to get like a Pitt up there, you can nab two or three bids. If your conference wins three or four championships in a row, then who's to say that you're not even better than the other conferences? And then it goes back to letting the money kind of like, it's like a cycle. So it's going to go around to different conferences at different times. And that's where the lower conferences trying to force two auto bids, I think they should play their hand better and say, "No, every conference needs one auto bid and that's it." However many at-large teams, that's up for debate after, but we need to find out how many conferences there are, because I think right now there's like seven or something. It's like a weird number, eight, nine. So like they need to figure out how many of them are going to be an auto bid and then how many other teams after that are at-large. That way, if a team from a smaller conference is like, "Oh, I wish my team like UCF would have had a shot a couple years ago," hey, you're in. You're the auto bid. If your team is a small school and you don't have a chance, win your conference. You could be the Gonzaga of the playoff. Could you imagine if a smaller school like Tulane made it to the Elite Eight like 3 years in a row? Like that would be crazy, right? And that could be a hypothetical. So like here, the at-large, the play-in games would have to face like the head Big Ten or SEC champ, which in most years you'd be kind of worried about, right? But what if an Iowa wins the Big Ten 1 year? or like randomly a Mississippi State wins and then holy crap, they get upset, but it doesn't really matter. Cause like Bama lost to them and then they're in, right? And they win it anyway as like a six seed. But I think having a scenario like this laid out, it doesn't matter how big the conferences get. As long as you give equal access, I wouldn't care about NIL or anything like that. Because you have the Ivy League schools now, their players are starting to unionize. Who's paying them a salary? I think the only thing that's going to happen from that is I don't think they give athletic scholarships. I could see them starting to force, hey, we need scholarships to play for you guys. But the degree might be worth it. So like they might not even be able to get anything out of it. Some of the smaller schools, I'm telling you, they're not going to be able to get the big NIL money. And even some of the bigger schools like A&M, guess what happened after they started to lose? We didn't hear about them paying for recruits anymore, right, Matt? Because if I'm a booster and my recruit, I'm paying millions of dollars and my team is winning seven games. I'm not going to pay next year when you call me. Hey, we really need this guy. It's like, you told me that last year. We won seven games. Give me a break.
Well, and I feel like that's where that relegation system works. Because when you look at what you're describing, how many times is that Tulane team going to be able to stand up to Alabama? You know, it's the NIL system and the way that the playoff formatting has worked, it's already created these tiers within the college football ranking. They're not outright saying it, but I mean, you're clearly seeing it. There's constant discussion. It's never, I wonder which ACC team we can get in the playoffs or which Big 12 team can we get in. It's how do we justify two SEC or two Big 10 teams in?
Well, even that, they're talking about, hey, we got new blood in the national championship this year. Michigan and Washington both won national championships in the 90s. So it's like, that's not even like the distant past. It's not like when TCU was in it, that was they're like, hey, they won it once in 1938. Like, yeah, that's some kind of new blood. But for a lot of teams, it's been there before NIL. It's the same teams based on recruiting ground and brand and prestige and sometimes like academics, where a team can kind of pull the recruits, like a Notre Dame or a Michigan can pull recruits from all over the world because they want to go there. And like, that's not going to help. NIL is going to help a little bit, but at the end, you're still selling NFL access and you're still selling a bunch of other stuff that I see a lot of teams that are doing gangbusters in NIL. They're not sending guys to the combine. They're not producing guys. So at some point, you're going to be paying for these guys, and I don't know if it's going to pay off. So it's going to be a weird thing. That's why I think that they're starting to push it, because I think a lot of the big schools with money are getting spooked. A&M's been paying. They haven't won anything. They're worried that they're not going to be able to make the playoffs. They're thinking, hey, we have a voice right now. We might only be able to get the third place SEC. We need that to be an auto bid. Because what if we win it and they leave us out? Like to your point, like you said about Florida State, what if A&M wins it? And people are like, yeah, A&M sucks. We're not putting you in the playoffs. Because that's a more realistic example, because they're paying for all these recruits. They want to see some return on their investment. They haven't been getting it. And they have to look at things and say, like, we might never, ever win the SEC. Even Texas coming in, they're saying we're taking the big bucks. We just won the Big 12. Maybe they're having buyer's remorse. I find it hard to believe that a random February after the playoffs where the Big Ten wins, that a lot of other schools are just randomly ready to make new deals for the playoffs. I think a lot of it's coming from SEC where they realize, hey, we have Oklahoma and Texas coming in, and Oklahoma hasn't made the playoffs in a while. Texas just won the Big 12, and now they're thinking, we might not win the SEC. When will we get back again? Because like if Texas wins, or like let's say they lose a couple games, they might not get picked. They might not get picked. And putting the auto bid in, I don't even know how you would determine who the third best team is in the SEC. Because if it's so large and you're not playing each other, in my model with the Big Ten, they're playing each other every 3 years. You would play every team. If it got a little bit bigger, I think I talked about this before, where if it went to 24, you could do an 11 game schedule, and that would give you a little bit less of, because I think each group would have six, right? A 24. So if you did the five in your division and then the other crossover division, you'd play an 11 game schedule. You'd only have one extra game, like kind of as a warm up game. And for the SEC, I think that would, the Big Ten, I think would be fine. Because if they did that, they could play a regional warm up school, and then NBC, Fox, and CBS would be pumped because they're getting more interconference games throughout the year, and they're getting better TV than if, like, okay, Pitt's playing Penn State. Awesome. That's great for regional fans, but they're not really bringing in the TV numbers that even a Penn State, Ohio State would get. And if Penn State's in a different division, I think the networks would rather have Penn State play Ohio State every once in a while instead. And so that's what these other conferences have to be worried about too. Because what if the Big Ten just decided to do that? We're just going to do an 11-game schedule. You really won't know how good our conference is, but we're going to hype it up like nobody's business. And who knows? We can get in the playoffs like the basketball. Like, well, a couple years ago, like, didn't the Big Ten only win one game? It was like Michigan was the only basketball team that won. But they got like 11 bids, buddy. Why? Hype. Hype. That's all it needs. And if they only play themselves, could you imagine like Ohio State talking about how fast their receivers are, how they have SEC speed? But you wouldn't know until they lose in the playoffs. But all year you'd hear about it because they have the biggest TV networks and they have everything. That's why if I'm the smaller conferences, I'm like, look, we want it to be like college basketball. Every conference gets a bid, and then the powers can kind of ebb and flow. Because 10 years ago, no one would have thought that the Big East would have multiple national championships and multiple like number one ranked teams throughout the year, with like UConn being number one again and like Villanova winning it all. And so like no one would have guessed that. Everyone would have thought when the other Big East kind of split and the football schools went to the ACC, everyone thought the Big East was dead. But they kept a small conference together and they were able to make a couple of runs. And that's why, like, I'll say it again, I'm on record. I don't think Clemson gets picked. I'm worried that NC State's not going to get picked. So the best way for them is to play in a watered down ACC, win the conference, make the playoffs, and then win a couple games, make it to the Final Four. Because I've been saying all along, if you shift it to kind of a basketball mindset where, hey, we're NC State, holy crap, we made the Final Four in football. Can you believe it? 10 years ago, we couldn't even win the ACC ever. Like, that would be a total mind shift, where then if you get people to buy in and boosters, you can have a team like a Gonzaga that comes out of nowhere, or like a West Virginia that's like, man, West Virginia is joining, like, they could leave the Big 12, go to this new ACC, play a lot of their rivals like Pitt. Because honestly, that's what I would like to see. And you brought it up, the regional side of things. What if the Big Ten grabs the teams that they want and the ACC just backfills with more regional teams like West Virginia or whatever? And they could even say Stanford, like, come on, guys, just go to the Big 12. We don't really want you anymore. It's not you. It's just, it doesn't make sense. And then you just have two smaller big conferences that have a lot of other rivalries. That Pitt West Virginia playing for a playoff spot late in November would be awesome again. And that's something that we lost when teams kind of split up. Now it's like, all right, Michigan and Ohio State playing in late November for a playoff spot, Auburn, Alabama playing. And the other conferences are like, yeah, we have nobody playing. Florida State's playing North Alabama right now. They're down 14. Quarterback's hurt. It's like, all right, who you guys playing next week? Florida? Oh, they're down too. So like, the ACC doesn't have that hype where it's like Florida State Clemson is going to be the last Thanksgiving game every year. That's what they need to step in and say. Forget in-state rivalries. That to me is what hurt the conference. And with the expanded conference, give them a little hope. Heck, because in my scenario, if Notre Dame came with Florida State, I would let Florida State and Notre Dame play Thanksgiving weekend. I know Notre Dame would rather play USC every year, but say like, hey, you guys get Indiana and Purdue every year, and then you get Florida State. Unless you want to be in the Western pod and take Nebraska's spot, which I could see them doing something jackass like that. It'd be like Oregon, Washington, Notre Dame, USC, and UCLA. And then like, hey guys, come in with the spray tan. Like, we're Cali boys. What's up? I'd be like, oh, good grief. Get out of here, you guys. Because that could be their move, right? Who knows what they would want in a scenario. They probably want the easiest path, though. So they would probably call up their good friends, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa, and say, guys, we want to be with you. We want to be with you. Because like Notre Dame, Indiana, Purdue, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, maybe? Or Wisconsin and Iowa. Like, that could be a weird pod. Move Minnesota back to the Michigan one, play for the Axe. Or the Jug, you know? And then they would lose the Axe with Wisconsin every year. But then Ohio State would lose the... Or they could bring back the Illibuck. Do they still play for that stupid trophy? So Michigan could play for the Jug every year and the Paul Bunyan Trophy if you bring Minnesota and Michigan State in the pod, but I really don't care about those. I'd rather have the Jug, to be honest. But that's my scenario. I laid it out. Sometimes it's easier to see. I really think that giving smaller teams access, especially like down here in North Carolina, we have App State. Just cutting them off would be weird. And then like having them play for like a smaller thing, I'm telling you, people aren't going to tune in just to watch a super conference, because the teams are going to be beating each other up. Look at Florida right now. They don't get any TV viewers anymore. They're winning, what, 7 games a year? If that, 5. If they cut out some of their other games, they're going to be losing, winning even less. People are going to tune out, and that's going to be it. And the NCAA is going to, or not the NCAA, they won't be the NCAA anymore. The Big Ten and the SEC are going to say, like, look, no one cares anymore. We don't know why. And it's like, no, that's why. People tuned in for hyped up matchups. You got rid of them. Now Michigan can play 3 MAC teams and then a 9-game Big Ten schedule and hopefully get 10 wins every year. And they could still have that level of hype, especially making a playoff as like an eight seed or something. Be living the dream. So that's my thing. Would you be interested in Florida State joining the Big Ten in that scenario, or would you want them to stay in the ACC if the ACC gets 2 bids?
I mean, if they can get a Big Ten bid, they're stupid to pass it up because of the TV money, the bias within the conference. I think that if you have the opportunity to win the conference and get an automatic first or second round bye out of it, you're nuts to say, no, I think I'll stay where I am. I mean, like, I on one hand, I've seen this scenario play out because this is essentially what they've been dealing with. You know, being in the ACC and just knowing that there's already this level of, well, it's not as good of a conference type mentality, and it just, I don't know. I think they're already battling that, and they're competing without the extra TV money coming in. And I feel like if you're really going to take that next step, you need to have that TV money so that it can expand on your facilities and your stadium. And Florida State right now is in the middle of a massive stadium renovation project. I think long term it's going to be helpful, but I mean, they're completely having half their stands are ripped out right now.
And see, that's where I keep seeing these projections, especially people down here in the ACC, where they think they're going to get this life raft, where the Big Ten and the SEC are just going to kind of zipper the ACC up and take half the conference. And to me, I think it's going to be a hard sell where you're going to say the TV networks have already spoken multiple times. Fox has said, we don't want anybody else. They didn't even want Oregon and Washington. So are you going to just have them come in? like, hey, Florida State, we're going to take six ACC schools, and you guys are all going to get 30% of the money.
I think it'd be hilarious if they just, like, made them full-paying members after the Pac-12 schools are like, no, we'll take less.
Well, see, that's right. It'd be funny if they did bring just Florida State and Notre Dame, and they're both full-paying members. But I'm worried that you're going to get a deal where it's like, hey, we just heard Florida State, Pitt, Virginia Tech, Georgia Tech, and Miami all came in, and they're only getting 30%. Awesome deal. And all the Big Ten guys are just patting each other on the back, and they're like, aren't they making less than what they were making in the ACC? And people were like, yes, they are. But they don't have the prestige of the Big Ten. Now they do. And it's like, how many years did they sign up for that? Like, what are they doing? Because I feel like that's going to be on the deal. If you're too desperate, they're going to say, hey, how about we just give you $45 million a year instead of 40. What do you say? And then what do you do? Like, nah, we'll just sink with our own ship. Because, like, that's where people are, I think a lot of NC State fans are just worried that they're going to be left behind. And so they're hoping a scenario comes where the bigger conferences just swoop in and grab a bunch of random teams. But I'm telling you, there has to be a stop for it, because otherwise it stops becoming a conference and then you're just this breakaway group. I really don't think they want to deal with the NCAA stuff, because let's be real, a lot of people don't bring this up, but the NCAA is handpicked by the university presidents already. They do exactly what the presidents tell them to do. Like, that's the deal. They came together. They had the NCAA do it because they don't want to have to deal with it. So they have this weird enforcement thing where sometimes they don't, like, really stick by their own rules. And it's kind of like a, I don't even know. Because it doesn't really apply everywhere. But when I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, you pull 60 schools together. Those 60 schools probably already have all the power in the NCAA. Getting rid of the NCAA to do what? Bring in another group where a bunch of schools that are petty get behind and they're like, we need to spy on Michigan again. Come on, they shouldn't be that good. That's the quote that sticks out to me is like, remember the team that was like Ohio State said, like, nobody should be that good. And it's like, yeah, they were national championship good. You guys wouldn't know that under Ryan Day. Of course they're better than you guys. You guys haven't won shit. And so, like, having a bunch of petty schools like that come together and form another group that's going to be just as petty, what's going to be the difference? You're still going to have people on, like, Michigan State and Ohio State teaming up on Michigan being like, we got to get these guys. Doesn't matter if it's called the NCAA or if it's called the Big Ten Power Committee. It doesn't matter. So, and bringing in other schools, like, I see groups where people are saying, like, Kansas State deserves it over Kansas. And then what happens to Kansas? They just become a basketball school? Or they're playing like Tulane? Like, what do you do? Kansas is way more valuable than Kansas State. You can't just pick the team because you think that they like football more. And a lot of the schools that people want to bring into the Big Ten, their stadiums are like half the size. They're like the Northwesterns. We don't need more Northwesterns. So what are you doing? Delusional. They're not going to go ahead and bring it. So if you're going to do it, I think there's going to be a small number. Notre Dame is the clear choice. It's not in either league. People are saying UNC would probably be the second value. I would argue Florida State, because Florida State is better in football and a bigger state altogether, especially to the Big Ten. I think Florida State would be more valuable to the Big Ten than UNC would. In the SEC, UNC would clearly be more valuable than Florida State. And then the rest of them, like Miami and Virginia Tech, they're not on Florida State's tier. Clemson isn't up there either. So, like, Virginia and North NC State, like, who's grabbing them? Georgia Tech, at this point, it's like, why? How are you going to sell Georgia Tech outside of the recruiting ground thing to the TV network? No one watches them. Like, the SEC, someone's going to be like, we don't want Georgia Tech back. We don't. Like, welcome back, brother. Come on in. We're going to beat the crap out of you every year. Okay, cool. And, like, I'm really worried about, like, Pitt in West Virginia. Pitt can't even come close to selling out the stadium. West Virginia, small money school. They don't have the big guns. They're going to get passed up for like a school like SMU that just comes in and they're just swinging money around. And people are like, who invited you? Why are you here? And they're like, we got the money, baby. They're like paying their friends to hang out. That's SMU. And in college football today, that could work. So that's my final thought. We'll get back into it probably next week. Anything else you want to add on college stuff?
No.
So the next thing I wanted to bring up, we'll go back to our normal view, is the NFL Combine. I think I talked about it last week, but they finally did the drills. And I noticed that the scores for players didn't really change after the drills. And I was like, wonder why. So I'm clicking through the player things. Most athletes only did one or two drills. And so I'm like, why even do any at all? Like, the combine has clearly dropped so much to the point where it's like, doesn't matter. Like, Marvin Harrison's not doing stuff. Okay. What's it going to do for him? Like, is it going to make him fall? Probably not. Yeah. Someone's going to take a shot at him.
But I think where the combine is helping is for guys on the fringe. Like, when you're looking at, I'm trying to make a move, and I'm trying to move up, and I'm betting on myself, the combine's helping. In some of these situations where, like a Marvin Harrison, that you already know was a front runner in the Heisman talks last year, and he already has the tape and the name and everything else going for him, that the only thing that he would do by participating in the drills is potentially hurting his stock. Because if he doesn't bench enough or he doesn't run this time, then it's a potential red flag to a lot of teams.
But the players are still going to do it at the individual workouts anyway. Because you're not going to come in. Because Travis Kelce, he brought up this week, I have to, you know, mention Taylor Swift's boyfriend. He said that...
You're such an idiot.
He said that he was smoking weed, so he had to miss a year of school. And the Cowboys like wanted him to repent. And he's like, look, guys, just don't take me. Which is a good attitude to have, I would think. Right? Like, I've moved past it. If you don't believe me, I'm not going to sit here and like beg for forgiveness. So then they didn't take him. And then the rest is history. But I could see, like, I'm not going to bench for you guys. I'd be like, that's a red flag. Like, how weak are you? Like, do you think if you're the guy, you're like going up to the player and like push him a little bit to see how, like, if he goes flying, like if he's weak? Because at some point, if you're not doing the drills, or you can have as much production on tape, but there have been a lot of busts. So you kind of want to make sure that the guys are healthy and like they're throwing and making good decisions. Because like, I watched JJ's workout because it was like going viral because some of his deep bombs were on point. And he also had some crazy throws. And then I was wondering, do a lot of players miss a couple throws in combine? So I'm like looking through other people's tape, and I'm like, yeah, they're all missing the same. But the caption on JJ's was like, hurts his stock with an inconsistent thing. And then the next person that posted on Twitter was like, JJ McCarthy shooting up the draft boards after on point throws in the combine. I'm like, it's the same exact video. Like, you guys just going for the clickbait here? Because I thought he looked good. And then someone was saying that he winds the ball up, takes too long. But I'm like, I was timing it in my head, and he gets the ball out pretty quick and accurate. And then they were saying that, like, he's probably going to move up to near the top 10. Where Caleb Williams, I'm not sold on. Because at some point, you need a guy, and I've, you know me for a long time, I like winners. Winners find a way to win. Like, Tom Brady was a winner. I've been saying it when he went to the Bucs. Every NFL team should be trying to get him. It was insane to me that teams didn't want to get him because he was a proven winner. And I didn't think Belichick was the driving force. And I was right. Tom Brady was the winner. And so when you have a guy like Caleb Williams that isn't winning, you're hoping that he becomes a Patrick Mahomes that became a winner in the NFL. won some close games, some games they probably should have lost, but now he's starting to get that swagger where Patrick Mahomes is becoming a winner. He won me over this year coming back from the Niners in that Super Bowl where their team had no business beating that Niners team. Niners were way more talented. You're smoking crack if you think that the Chiefs were anywhere as talented as the 49ers this year. The 49ers could have easily blown them out by two touchdowns. And it was embarrassing, is poor coaching on their part, that they were even close to the Packers and the other team that they almost lost to, was the Lions. Like, they're down. Like, they should have lost to the Lions. So, Caleb Williams, to me, his behavior on the field and off the field doesn't line up with Patrick Mahomes. So there's nothing in him that what I've seen in interviews or anything that makes me think he's worth the number one overall pick. I also am in the boat where I'm at the point where I don't think UNC quarterbacks are any good. Can you name me one successful UNC quarterback?
Mitch Trubisky.
They're entering Ohio State territory for me, Matt. I've been thinking about it. And this goes all the way back to Mac Brown at Texas. I know Colt McCoy got hurt. Vince Young, bust. Colt McCoy, bust. Nothing happened with him in the NFL. How many other quarterbacks has he put in there? And the UNC as a whole, I'm starting to think that it's like more of a system thing that they run, where it's kind of like Ohio State, where their guys are going to be a bust. CJ Stroud might prove me wrong. He might be one in a million where he's actually successful. Didn't he transfer in from like Georgia or somewhere? So maybe that's what does it. Joe Burrow transferred out. CJ Stroud transferred in. Maybe the guys at the Buckeyes evaluate on their own don't make it. But UNC, there's nothing where I would ever draft any of their quarterbacks high. And just thinking about like the list. And I'm not saying that like JJ's a lock. I don't know any of the quarterbacks. Honestly, if I was taking a pick and I would want a guy that's accurate, I'd just go for Penix, right? He looked the most polished to me. He took an under-talented Washington team to the national championship. That's a winning attitude. He beat Oregon twice. I don't know how you can pick Bo Nix over him. Bo Nix lost head-to-head. It's like picking the loser, right? It's like the Steelers, like if the Steelers picked Bo Nix and then the Browns picked Penix and then the Browns won two Super Bowls and every year he's just losing to the Steelers with Bo Nix, I would be like, you guys had to see that coming. Why? Why would you pick the loser of the two? Because of hype and variables or whatever? So that's where I'm looking through, like Drake May. You might have the immeasurables. Jaden Daniels, another one. LSU's uber talented. They said that his stock kind of fell a little bit to where some people were like, JJ might pass him. And I was thinking, like, Daniels had way more talent than every other team that they're losing to. He should have been a winning percentage like JJ. There's no reason they should have been losing and not scoring on some of those games, even to Florida State. Like, what are you doing? Florida State, that should have been even talented. That should have been a shootout or a close game, and it wasn't. So what confidence do I have in them? That's the one thing, like, for a lot of these quarterbacks. I would almost take a chance at, like, a Devin Leary that won at NC State and won at Kentucky. Or is Jordan Travis healthy? Maybe him. He seems to be... he seemed to have that type of confidence where if he went on to have a long career successful, I wouldn't be surprised. But to me, that's my quarterback rankings after kind of watching him. And I know some of them didn't throw, and that people are like, they don't throw in shorts and a t-shirt either. And it's like, yeah, but I watched like JJ throw in the national championship. He seemed to do well. I watched Penix beat Texas by himself, seemed to do well. Everyone was hyping him up after that game. So at some point, I see that, and someone was like, the one breakdown on Penix was his hand is big. He could throw in cold weather. That was the highlight quote that they had at the top. And I thought, man, if Pickett saw that, he'd be so mad. A normal-sized hand from a quarterback. Penix has been injured. But like a lot of the guys, if you're just quarterbacking, Tom Brady, did his reconstructed knee or whatever he had, did that ever slow him down? He's like 40 years old playing. At some point, it's about taking care of yourself too. But some of the other guys, I was hoping I would see more hype. They still have neighbors ahead of Harrison Jr. everywhere. And Adunze, did he run? I was surprised that, what does it say on here? Yeah, he ran a 4.4. But going through the list, I was surprised that Roman Wilson ran like a 4.3. And people were like, not fast enough. I'm like, he was pretty good at Michigan. He made that game-saving catch against Bama. He runs a 4.3, and people were still like, not good enough. Sorry, my man. 4.3 is insane. I don't care about any of that. I have to speak about who was the fastest time here. It ended up being Xavier Worthy, right?
Yep.
So this is how I'm going to end the show, Matt. Oh, no, I got to talk about the cuts real quick. But Xavier Worthy runs the fastest time, and it triggers Josh Gattis to where he goes on Twitter and just starts throwing things all over. He's going crazy. He's accusing team. Someone called him out for Michigan's 2-4 season during COVID. And then he said, made a comment about coaches being on the field with the players and that they should ask like the rival recruiting group because they know which coaches are actually working with players. And I saw a couple of people say like, oh, he's saying that Michigan was illegally coaching players. But I just think that he was so fired up that his tweet didn't make sense. He made it seem like Michigan had a bad year because they were competing against teams like Ohio State that were able to work with players because the state of Michigan didn't allow the coaches to work with the players for a while. And so he was saying, I'm not a crap offensive coordinator. I won the Broyles. Like, it's not my fault we weren't allowed to be on the players. But his text was so crazy that he was like, the bullshit ends here. That I'm like, is he talking about Michigan? Because like he was the one that Harbaugh wasn't going to take with him to the Vikings, right? Harbaugh said, you got to go find a new job right after they won the Big Ten championship. And everyone thought the coaching staff was going to the Vikings. And then the Vikings were like, yo, we didn't even finish the interviews. We're not hiring you. And then Harbaugh tucked his tail and came back. And he had already taken that pay cut or whatever. So like Michigan didn't give him a raise. Like it was really uncomfortable what ended up happening. But he went to Miami. Exposed himself to the janitor or whatever. Like all kind of weird scenarios going on with the guy. And there were some rumors with the Michigan thing with Xavier Worthy that you can look him up if you want to. I'm not going to speak on there because he said that they're slander to his family. But the exposure one, that was in the news recently. So you can look that one up. Well, I think it was when he was coaching at Miami. But to just be waiting and knowing that Xavier Worthy was going to have a good time and then being triggered by that is a bad look for a guy that's trying to move up to be a head coach, right? I would think that that's worse than like anything else he could have done. Because anyone can easily search those tweets and you're going to be like, I'm not going to hire you, buddy. Come on. What are you thinking? So any coaches or players out there, be careful. Don't respond to fan groups. He was responding to a JJ McCarthy fan account. Like, what would possess you to say, you know what, I feel like ruining my career today, right? Xavier Worthy is so much in his head that he just blows up his future career prospects because people are going to look at that tweet and be like, is he throwing his employer under the bus for violations? Is he complaining about other schools having violations? Because the Ohio State one was around the time where I think it was one of the recruiting groups, they had pictures on like Rivals or Scout, which is why it made me think that he was talking about Ohio State, because they posted pictures of Ohio State coaches working with players before the Big Ten came back on the field for practice. Harbaugh brought it up, right? Like, hey, how are your coaches allowed to work with the players? And then that's when Ryan Day said, worry about your own team. We're going to hang 100 on you or whatever. And then that's what started Michigan beating them 3 times in a row. So that was the exchange that I thought Gattis was talking about. Some other people were wondering if he was talking about like bad blood with Harbaugh, but it didn't seem like Gattis was the kind of coach that had like bad blood like that. And Penn State, he worked at Penn State too, and Penn State was one of the ones that wasn't allowed to work with players, and they came out of the gate, and they were like 2-4 something that year too. Like, I think they might have won a couple more games at the end. They might end up 4-4, but they started the season. And so every team that wasn't allowed to work with players was really bad that year. Michigan State, Michigan, Penn State, where other schools that their state didn't care. Of course, they had the COVID advantage, right? So, of course, Josh Gattis is going to be a little bit ticked about that. But that's my little aside from the NFL Combine. The last thing I had, NFL cuts. Some big cuts being made, talking about cutting Kirk Cousins, maybe the Vikings going with JJ. But more pertinent to the Steelers, I could see them going with Kirk Cousins. But Russell Wilson now is heavily rumored after the Broncos cut that worst trade in history. I said, based on fantasy production, that Russell Wilson was dying as a QB. Every year he started hot. And when the playoffs came around in fantasy, you had to find a new guy because he was tired and worn out and his production fell off a cliff. And that's exactly what the Broncos got. An awful deal. So Pittsburgh fans, you're listening to our show. You're worried about Pitt, the Pitt Panthers being left behind. You heard my big spiel about the Big Ten. Maybe you're a Penn State fan. You're excited about that. You would not be excited about Russell Wilson. Trust me. I watched him. When I have a guy on my fantasy team, you know, reigning champ, I watch my guys and I make my decisions based on how they're performing. Russell Wilson, I would never touch, ever. Even if I was just picking someone up off the waiver wire for a 1 week buy fill-in, I can't trust him. Broncos figured that out. Seahawks figured that out. Seahawks figured it out and they're laughing about it. Could you imagine the news breaking and they're like, oh, yeah. We knew it. Overpaid for him, too. So sweet. Now the Broncos are just what? Imagine being the quarterback coming into that. Where it's like, Russell Wilson wasn't good enough. Now, they should get like they should get Drake May. Another hyped up guy. Or they should trade for Caleb Williams. That'd be funny. The Broncos hype machine.
Don't even.
You don't care about the Broncos. What do you care? That's not the Falcons or the Raiders for you. If he went there, he'd have to play Harbaugh, coach Chargers. So you know their defense is going to be clicking. You're going to play the Chiefs. So you're going to be in a shootout with Mahomes every year. And then the Raiders. We don't know what the Raiders are doing at QB. I've said it with Adams there, they should do like a JJ move. They're looking good with Aiden O'Connell.
No, the Raiders are going to take, they'll take that Tennessee quarterback because he threw the ball 90 yards.
Hey, that, you know, he also played at Michigan.
Jamarcus Russell 2.0.
Milton. I watched Milton. I watched him plenty of times. He played, if you're looking for some Milton highlights and you want to see some good times, the COVID year when we played Minnesota. And it looked like, holy crap, Michigan got their pro quarterback for the first time ever. And then the next week, all the wheels fell off. And it was like, who is this guy? What's he doing? He's missing people wide open. Someone said that if you look up his interceptions at Wisconsin, you'll know that if you're an NFL fan that drafts him, you'll know what you're in for. But he seemed to be better at Tennessee. Tennessee's another school where they're probably voting for that third auto bid. They're like, heck yeah, we're not winning the SEC championship, but we might win third. We got to make sure we're in. Them and A&M have like a blood pact. But what do you think? If you're the Steelers now, there's more quarterbacks available. Who do you want? You want Russ?
No. Well, I feel like because of the quarterbacks currently on the market, I feel like it took Pittsburgh out of the running for acquiring Justin Fields because the Bears seemed to lower. They were demanding a king's ransom, and now they're down to a second round draft pick for him. And I don't know that I would give up the draft capital knowing that you can get Wilson for a year. I mean, I don't think you need to make a major commitment, because if you're saying Pickett's the guy, whether he is or he isn't, you can buy yourself some time adding a veteran quarterback that's had highs and lows in the league. Sometimes a change of scenery does those guys well. I mean, whether you look at Tannehill or, I mean, I think you attack, if you're Pittsburgh, you attack the draft from, we need to protect whoever's back there. And if you sign a vet, you know, Tannehill makes sense because he would have played in that Arthur Smith system at Tennessee, so he would be familiar with the concepts.
And that's where I just don't know. They have to get an identity, though. You can't just pick a guy that's like, he might be okay. Because, like, a lot of teams right now that could also help the Steelers, like Chargers and the Seahawks, are both cutting a bunch of defensive guys right now to, like, save money. And so if you're able to get some other defensive help for cheap, then maybe you go for another, I don't want to say rookie quarterback, but you can go for another younger guy. Maybe you do pick up like a Kirk Cousins or someone that knows how to win with defense that you can kind of build the identity around. I remember when Ben won, it was because the Steelers defense was awesome back then. He didn't have to do much. They were even downplaying it this year in the playoff run. They were talking about like how rookie quarterbacks really don't have a run except for Ben, but we're not going to count Ben's because he didn't throw that much in his rookie run, right? That's whenever they're talking about C.J. Stroud.
And I don't think you have to. I think there's such an overemphasis right now on quarterback play. And if you have a Tom Brady, if you have a Patrick Mahomes, I think it's easy to say quarterback driven, let him throw 56 times a game and let him check you into the right calls and right protections and do all that stuff. If you don't, it's okay to have the defense set for you. I mean, Pittsburgh has the edge pressure and generating sacks and generating negative plays. It's going to set the offense up for success. The only thing that you need the offense to do is don't go three and out every single drive and exhaust the defense. It can't be pass, 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 no time off the clock and punt.
And so a quarterback or whatever is not going to change that. Build along the lines and see what you can do just in terms of consistency. But I think a lot of teams think that if they get a hot quarterback, that they're able to make plays. And even if they have a crappy offensive system, the quarterback's going to bail them out. That's why I'm really interested to see what Harbaugh does with Herbert. Because, like, people just expect him to be like, oh, this is great. But it's like, in Harbaugh's system, Harbaugh's not going to let him go crazy. That's what the Chargers have been doing, and they've been doing shit. He's going to mold him into what JJ was, where he's like, why is he only throwing 20 times a game? What are they doing? That's what I want to see. Because even with Lamar, they were still more run focused for a long time. And that's what everyone was saying. Like, maybe he can't pass to win the games, but maybe you can. Steelers need to get back to that. Bring in some running QBs. Let's get some stuff rolling. There's not too many of them coming out of college anymore. A lot of stuff just going right to the spread. You're not getting any power. Like, you brought up Jamarcus Russell. Like, we're not seeing any big bruising type Cam Newton guys come through anymore. Vince Young, I brought up earlier. Who's coming in that is that guy?
And I think of the, like, when I look at these quarterbacks, I'm not saying that they're all going to be busts, but what I am saying is they're going to bust if you try to take them and plug them in as a day one starter. Like, I don't see any of those quarterbacks being a guy that I would feel comfortable drafting or wanting a team to jump up and grab him and make him the day one starter. I just don't see it.
Absolutely. Even Aaron Rodgers had to sit a few years. That's why I was more comfortable with Jordan Love, because it looked like he could move the ball and he was doing things a little bit different. Now, next year, when things are caught up to him, is he going to make the bonehead mistakes he made on that game-losing drive against the Niners, or is he going to be able to grow from that and mold his game based on what he learned sitting on the bench, seeing how Aaron Rodgers adapted? Aaron Rodgers had to watch Brett Favre make how many mistakes, and then he's probably like, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to throw in a triple coverage.
And I do think that that in that frame where you have a lot of other pieces in place, I think it's okay that you can win with a stopgap quarterback. You can take that journeyman, and it's been proven time and time again that they can win when you have everything else around them. And then if you want to take a fourth round pick on one of those guys, and you're going in with the expectation that they're here to learn. These are projects. This is taking time. I mean, I think you have to go offensive line to start. You got to look, if you don't address the defensive line in free agency or the secondary in free agency, you got to address it in the draft. And I wouldn't, if I'm being honest, I probably wouldn't touch a quarterback till the fourth round or fifth round, just because I think there's other needs that have to be met first. And if Deontay's looking to move on and wants traded, fine. Get that capital, and I would rather see, you know, another take a flyer on Keon Coleman and get another receiver that can actually catch.
They could probably get another vet or two. Remember, like, when they lost Juju and they thought he could go out there and he thought he can get more money? They're going to be guys floating around. So we'll check back in. We'll get a lot more of the roster cuts finalized because I think it just started. But anything else you want to say before we go?
I was just proud of the Florida State guys at the Combine. For as much as Herb Street and ESPN tried to make a big deal about the Jordan Travis injury, they performed well, almost like it's a team sport.
I'm surprised you didn't bring it up earlier. I was talking about JJ. They've talked about Corum. Corum ran a 4.5, and I thought, hey, that's probably better than I thought he ran. And then people were like, oh, that's slow. What a bum. I'm like, a week ago, they were saying he wasn't going to get drafted. Now they're saying he could be third round. He benched 27 times. I'm like, good for him for showing up and doing the drills. And then they did a comparison, like they did the overlay on the NFL Network, like for the agility running, like pure running back drills. And they were showing that like Blake was so much faster than a lot of the other guys that have been successful in the pros. And I thought, good for him showing up, doing the drills. He's older. He might only have a couple years to like make a run in the NFL. I've said he could probably be a third round back, but do the drills, compete. That's what a lot of the small schools. I know Florida State had a lot of guys there too, I think. That's a mark of like a good team that you're building, putting guys in the NFL. And that's why, like I brought up earlier, a team like A&M, yeah, you paid for all the recruits. How many of those guys are in the combine? How many of those guys getting drafted?
It's getting the right guys. And to me, that was a tell sign of the comments that they made about how important Norvell was to them and bringing him in and establishing the culture. They're trending in the right direction. And it was everything that as a fan, I wanted to see. And I think it was more fuel to the Florida State fire.
That's the only thing I've been kind of worried about, Sharon Moore coming in with like no experience. But reading like the NFL, they're saying how Michigan's offensive linemen are so far ahead of every other team there, and Sharon Moore was the offensive line coach. That makes me feel a little bit better, because offensive line can kind of move your entire offense. If you have a weak offensive line, doesn't matter how talented your team is, you're going to have some rough games. Where I think having a solid offensive line, if Michigan can maintain that and continue to have guys put up like that in the combine and get great results, then they're going to be able to maybe continue their success they had under Harbaugh, even with him not being there. That's my hope anyway. But we'll come back. Hopefully we don't hear any expansion news, because I'm worried that like if they act too fast, they're like, what if the Big Ten just takes UNC and Notre Dame? Like a slap in the face to Florida State, and it's off to the Big 12. But We'll see, because things are starting to heat up. Got that combine coming up, and then the UFL starts at the end of the month. So we'll be circling around on that. So thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.